FM, broadcasting live.
You are listening to All Access Pass, created by the Accessibility Collective on 101.9 CITR FM.
CITR's collectively run show that covers issues of inclusion, equity, and accessibility for people with diverse cognitive and physical abilities.
On campus and beyond.
We are broadcasting live from our studio in the AMS Student Nest on the traditional, ancestral, occupied, and unceded territory of the Musqueam people.
Hello, it's Wednesday afternoon, and you are listening to All Access Pass on CITR 101.9 FM. My name is DB, and I'm joined by my collective teammates. And, yeah, you guys want to say hi?
Yeah, for sure. Hi. Good evening. I am Patrick.
Hello, I am Kaylin.
And I'm Spencer.
And I'm Desi.
And speaking of Spencer, first off, we would like to welcome back a former and rejoining member to the Access Collective, Spencer Williams. Yay!
Thank you. I'm happy to be back.
Great to have you back. Those of you who don't know Spencer, he was a part of Season 1's All Access Pass, who was in charge of finding cool music and co-hosted with then Access Collective coordinator Molly McAllister. So let's get to know him. Spencer, what have you been doing from your time away from All Access Pass for over a year?
Well, for starters, I started a job writing a column on sex and disability for Vice New York.
Okay. Why were you interested in rejoining the Access Collective?
I was just interested in rejoining the collective because, like, when I was part of All Access Pass Season 1, I was just really excited to get the word out about, you know, accessibility and accessibility issues and share some, like, new and exciting tidbits about, you know, disability and share, you know, great new music with the city of Vancouver.
Sounds good. You wrote articles for Vice. Can you share with us what some of those articles were about?
Okay, well, to start off, back in the summer of 2016, I was selected to do a documentary on sex and disability with Vice. The documentary actually featured CITR. Mm-hmm. They followed me around for a day and interviewed me about, like, you know, what it was like to work at the station and, like, navigating the world as a person with CP. And, well, some of my articles are about you know, disability and disability issues regarding sexuality and, like, just, like, how to control self-esteem and about my experience as a person living with cerebral palsy. That's pretty much That's pretty much the gist of what I do.
Sounds great. Lastly, and this is my favorite question, tell us what your favorite hobbies are, and is there any fun fact or hidden talent or talents you can share with us?
Well, like I said, I mean, I'm a big music fan. I like, you know, I've been a writer, podcaster, website designer for like years. I went to broadcasting school at BCIT, and I'm looking to get back into taking classes, and the area that I'm most interested in exploring is human sexuality, because that's what I'm most passionate about right now. Yeah.
Sounds great. Well, welcome back, and thanks so much for the interview.
No problem. It's good to be back.
So now we're going to go song break, and this song is Stay For Real by Young Galaxy. Enjoy.
In the engine room, the game is around. I got fires to put out in the rain on an eastbound train, rushing towards some kind of future. Where you found me in the lonely wooden tower, nothing's more real than what it is, and I'm trying. Keep it plain and devout as the fires burn out in my brain, in an unlit lane, marking a road that leads to nowhere. Where you found me in the lonely wooden tower, nothing's more real than what it is. That's what I'm trying to show you. Thank you.
feels like the only thing
you can count on in life is the fact that Mint Records will always have a Christmas party and always have it ridiculously early. This year, join Woolworm, Needles and Pins, Jay Arner, Supermoon, Kellerisa, and Dumb at the Astoria on December 2nd for music, presents, and Christmas fun.
Okay, welcome back to All Access Pass. Just before that, you were listening to a song by Young Galaxy called Stay For Real. So hi, my name is Desi, and I'm the Access Collective Coordinator here at All Access Pass. So our topic this week is representation of disability in film and TV. And I can tell you right now, we all got a little heated, a little passionate about this week's topic. So this comes as a rather timely period. We've seen a number of movies released with plot lines around disability. However, those playing the characters don't actually have disabilities themselves. These are able-bodied actors playing out disability, and there might be some issues in that, and we're going to go into that today. So some examples right off the bat, we got the film Stronger, which came out this September. The film tells the true story of Jeff Bauman, a man who lost his legs in the Boston Marathon bombing, learned to walk again with the help of prosthetic limbs. He's played by the very lovely Jake Gyllenhaal, who appears quadriplegic with the help of CGI. Just last month, Breathe came out, which leading actor Andrew Garfield spends a majority of the film in a wheelchair as Robin Cavendish, a man who is paralyzed from the neck down by polio. There was also Wonderstruck, starring Julianne Moore, in which she plays a deaf woman. And just last week, a film that you, DP and I were really excited about, maybe not excited for all the right reasons, but excited about, starring Julia Roberts, Owen Wilson. It's called Wonder, and it was released in theaters just last week. It tells the heartwarming story of acceptance for a boy with Treacher-Collins syndromes, played by Jacob Tremblay. Jacob Tremblay, he's most commonly known for his critically acclaimed acting in the movie The Room. Now, Treacher-Collins syndrome is a genetic disorder which causes face deformities. So all of these films kind of point to a larger issue in Hollywood, not just in film, but in TV too. If we look at film, there was recently a report put out titled Inequality in 800 Popular Films by the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism. In this report, it was found that disabled actors with speaking roles, or even actors identified by name, made up only 2.4% of the characters of the top 100 popular films. Furthermore, these disabled characters only played out supporting or insequential roles. So there are less disabled characters taking on starring roles or starring predominant characters. Ooh. TV has also had similar numbers on representation. The disability rights organization Rudderman Family Foundation found that while the disabled account for nearly 20% of the U.S. population, fewer than 2% of TV characters do. Now, this is a problem because within this 2% of TV characters that are disabled, 95% of them are played by able-bodied actors. So how can we understand this issue of misrepresentation of disability in film and TV even further? I'm going to pass this over to Patrizio here.
Okay, for sure. Hi, everyone. First of all, I would like to really congratulate the groups and agencies that promote inclusion of actors with disability, which you already mentioned, Desi. Respectability, KMR Management, Rudderman Family Foundation, and Casting Society of America's Inclusion and Diversity Committee. You're pioneers, leaders in what you're doing, and remember, you're making a difference. When you employ, you promote a disabled actor in a campaign, an ad, or a movie, it means not only that disabled people will support your company or will support your mission as an organization, but so will friends and relatives. It is a way of distinguishing yourself against your competition, and it's a way to celebrate our differences and accept and enjoy the diversity we live with. Desi, you just mentioned some numbers and facts about how accessible Hollywood really is.
Right.
And many of those were the disabled characters with speaking roles or that are identified by name made up only 2.4% of
yep.
characters
yep.
in the top 100 popular films. And after doing and digging, on the internet, I could find that, at least in California, there are 870 certified agencies. And so far, we only found four.
We only found four groups. So some of them aren't even agencies, but they're groups that try to lower those barriers. And I remember this was something also we were talking about when we were preparing for this piece, like, you know, how accessible is the whole casting process in general? Groups like, what was it? It was Respectability, which you mentioned, that actually work to make casting and just Hollywood and the production just more accessible in general. And I think that's super important, because if we look at this number, 2.4 characters out of 100 popular films, then we look at the even smaller amount of people that are being represented, that actually have a disability, that are representing a character with disability, it kind of points to maybe that there's an inaccessible aspect of how these characters get casted, and yeah, why, you know, it's, you know, with that, it's kind of interesting, because, you know, you see these films, like, they're, you know, they're quite acclaimed. We got films in the past too, like My Left Foot with Daniel Day-Lewis.
No, totally. I mean, there are many other films, but at the same time, I believe drama schools and many agencies, they're not accessible at all. Right. When they are doing auditions, and even consider all the universities when they are doing their admission processes. I mean, yeah. Sometimes when you want to enroll to drama school, you need to go to the university, do an audition, and some people can do that.
Right.
Or they don't have other facilities or other means to send applications. So, I don't know, sometimes I just stop for a moment and I think about many people that dream to become actors or actresses, and they give up their dreams just because sometimes in the mainstream film industry, you don't see too many actors in wheelchairs or with any other disability,
right,
but real ones. Mm-hmm. As you said, many of them are embodied with people that are not disabled.
Right. Yeah. I mean, this kind of also brings up to this big question for people that, you know, do watch these films. They've seen Stronger. They've maybe seen what's some other films like My Left Foot or Rain Man. And they're like, you know, these films are really inspiring. And I got to learn about the hardships of disability, which then brings up the question, like, then is it okay for able-bodied actors to play actors with disabilities? And that's kind of where we're centering a lot of what we're going to be talking about on this show. You know, when they asked the director of Wonderstruck why, you know this is a deaf character that was casted, Julianne Moore took her part, why couldn't you have picked someone else who was hearing impaired? And he said that they wanted that draw, they wanted to pull in the box office revenue. So,
and you know, the problem with many Hollywood studios is that they try to sell an aspirational view,
right,
to those actors. But right, in acting, I mean, I believe there is much less focus on looks right now. And it is about what can you bring to the character, how you can portray the character. Right. And writers and directors and producers are finally waking up to the fact that there is drama, humor, love, and many other characteristics in actors with disabilities. I mean,
sure,
one of the examples that I really like, because this guy, he has portrayed the roles in which he is acknowledged.
I think I know who you're going to say.
Yeah, as,
I know who you're going to say.
As a disabled. And in other movies, his disability is not touched at all.
Mm-hmm.
His name is Peter Dinklage.
Yep, that's,
yeah,
who, that's
the one
who
of Game of Thrones.
Say.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, he's a person with dwarfism.
Yep.
And he won an Emmy for his performance in Game of Thrones, and I believe it was really well-deserved.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, his character of Tyrion Lannister is nuanced and has great depth, even though his sheer stature is not ignored. I mean, all the characters are always mentioning to him, well, don't forget what you are, which at the same time, you know, Game of Thrones in medieval ages and the stage, it's put a different perspective. But besides that, I would like to emphasize how this guy, I mean, he went to drama school in London. And once he graduated, he didn't allow his size to be an impediment.
Right.
Do you remember, I think, one of the Christmas movies, Elf?
Yeah. That's when you said Peter Dinklage, you went Game of Thrones. My mind went Elf, the Christmas movie with Will Ferrell, where he plays this, like, hot-headed, oh, what was his character? He's some big guy in, like, children's story publishing and...
Yeah, I'm totally sure that guy in real life, he must have a really strong character.
Oh.
Because, yeah.
I feel like that.
All the characters that he portrays are, I was like, strong and have a really high temperament. But there are other movies in which his condition isn't mentioned at all. Mm-hmm. Like X-Men, Days of the Future Past, where he interprets this scientist called Bolivar Trask. You remember? The guy, head and CEO of Trask Industries, who mm-hmm. creates a range of robots called Sentinels that were designed to find and destroy mutants.
For sure. I think there is so much to talk about with this topic. And with that, I think we gotta, like, turn it over to someone else. We're gonna just dive into that this hour. And with that, Kaylin.
Yeah, Kaylin, please. We're going to be thoroughly analyzing other films using the famous gold test. So, Kaylin, what can you say about that?
All right, so Jenny Gold created the Gold Test, and she is a filmmaker known for her documentary Cinema Ability, which centers around disability in film. The message of the documentary Cinema Ability is clear. Those with disabilities are active and critical members of our society, capable of making substantial contributions to not only the entertainment industry as actors, who deserve intelligent stories that don't focus on their disability, directors, producers, and more, but to all industries. This may seem obvious, yet people with disabilities are often treated unfairly or not given opportunities because of their disability, and change is necessary. She is the founder of the Gold Test, which is like the Bechdel test for women in movies. The Gold Test asks whether a work of fiction prominently features a disabled character whose story is not about their disability and whose character is not solely defined by their disability. She created this test after noting that most mainstream films do a terrible job of not only incorporating individuals with a disability in film, but when there is a disability, it seems to be all the movie is actually about. Now, there are a few movies that pass the Gold Test, including Deadpool, Mad Max, and Creed, but there are many, many more that do not. The ones that do not either fail to incorporate any individuals with disability at all, or they fail to place emphasis on something other than the disability themselves. Researching this topic, it inspired us to take this knowledge and the concept of the Gold Test into consideration and apply to some films that display disability and question whether or not they pass or fail the Gold Test.
Thanks, Kaylin. So I'm going to be talking about The Other Sister. Directed by Gary Marshall, The Other Sister was released on February 26, 1999. This romantic comedy movie is about Juliette Lewis's character, Carla Tate, who was born with intellectual disability, and her mother, Elizabeth Tate, played by Diane Keaton, is unable to control her daughter's behavior and disability, gets her maid to handle her young child, and when that doesn't go well, this reason alone, Carla is sent to a special needs school and separated from her family for 8 years of her life. When Carla comes back home to San Francisco from her disability boarding school with great determination and enrolls at Bay Tech Junior College, that's where she meets a similarly unique guy, Daniel Danny McMahon, played by Giovanni Ribisi. Through her friendship and later in a romantic relationship with Danny, Carla realizes she can handle her life on her own and be independent like everyone else at her age. The movie doesn't have an actual plot, but it shows Carla's journey on her way for a normal, happy, and independent life. I do think this movie has passed the Gold Test, because it is about Carla's life, and although she has a disability, she doesn't let it take over her life completely and conquers what she believes in and proves She's capable of living her life the way she wants to live. In a real world, some people with disabilities who advocate for themselves want freedom as well as be independent by making their own choices instead of family members or other people dictating decisions for their needs and mind. Though their characters deal with intellectual disability, Juliette Lewis and Giovanni Ribisi don't have disability themselves. However, the actor's portrayal of Carla and Danny is shown tremendously well and incredibly believable with great emotions that the audience can understand and relate their characters' feelings. In my opinion, The Other Sister is a realistic film where there is Carla's emotional outbreaks of wanting to be accepted by her own family members and showing a strong message of, quote, "Yes, I can if you give me a chance, mother," end quote. Furthermore, the family members in the movie were portrayed very well and natural by veteran actors like Diane Keaton and Tom Skerritt. Diane Keaton's Mrs. Tate is shown on both ends of the spectrum to the audience by wanting to make up the lost years to her daughter and unwillingness to let Carla grow up and be on her own, out of fear and perhaps stubbornness as well. Tom Skerritt, as Mr. Tate, does a remarkably good job as husband living with a past of drinking problems and being there for Carla when she was a child. But he's certainly there for her when she's grown up and basically holds the family together. Supporting actors bring important depth to the touching film, too, with two sisters, Heather, played by Sarah Paulson, and Caroline, the character, played by Poppy Montgomery, Kate, by adding another layer to the family drama. Caroline is getting married, while Heather, who works in New York, is also seeking acceptance from her mother to acknowledge the fact that treated as a normal person and be allowed to make New York is also seeking acceptance from her mother to acknowledge the fact that she is gay. The sisters also act as a normal or a moral background, stating that Carla be treated as a normal person and be allowed to make mistakes or risks as any ordinary person would. When Carla comes home and sees her mom, her mood changes and she was showing emotionless, like not making any emotion. So to explain it even further, in this scene, the audience was showing that she hugs her mother, not because she wants to, but because she is her mother and was taught to respect her mother no matter what. In this particular scene, it was very natural for Carla to feel the way she did when she sees her mom after a long time, because she didn't want to create any problems for her mother, and in her mind, if she misbehaves, she would be sent away. Though I watched this movie when it first came out, it was common where there were institutions, not disability schools, out in the 1960s, 1999 era, and people with disabilities would be placed there. Nowadays, though, there's no such thing as disability school because there are now group homes, day programs, and respite homes where a caregiver would take in a person with a disability and teach them life skills and other things. this film doesn't show how or what Carla is taught at her special needs school, boarding, but she does mention throughout the movie of what she learned there. When a person with intellectual disability is described as characterized by significant limitations, both intellectual functioning, like reasoning, learning, and problem solving, and in adaptive behavior, which covers a range of everyday social and practical skills. This disability usually occurs before the age of 18. So overall, the movie does have a true definition that with Danny, and most of all, from Carla's side of things. The other sister is an excellent with romance, motions, and some humor in it. But most of all, it shows great deal of disability representation and how family members, mostly the parents of Carla, handle their grown-up daughter. With my analyzing on this movie, the same comments were made by most bloggers I've read that were mostly positive reviews with 10 out of 10 marking. And this is a spoiler alert, so apologies for this, but my favorite line of the whole movie was when Carla tells her mom, quote, "We can take care of each other," end quote, and it ends with Carla and her mother hugging lovingly and happily. So if you haven't watched The Other Sister, please do, because it's great.
Awesome. Thank you, DP. So all right, with that, we are going to head into a song break, but stay tuned, because when we return, we will have Patricio, Sarah, and myself talking about movies and TV incorporating disability. This is Mystic by Tash Sultana.
Thank you. and Disorders Shindig is back for the 34th year and is hosted at Hastings Mill Brewing Company, formerly known as Pat's Pub, every Tuesday night.
We've curated a spicy roster of local musicians, and there are 27 bands, 27 winners, but someone has to take home the Shindig Windig crown from last year's champ, Little Sprout.
Come watch bands jam out, have fun, and battle it out for some rad prizes provided by our sponsors.
Sarah Fox Postering,
Nimbus Recording, Cannery Brewery,
Pandora's Box,
Vader Master Studios, Rain City Recorders,
Mint Records,
Music Waste, Live from Thunderbird Radio Hell,
Sixth Cent Press,
Blue Light Studios, Hastings Mill Brewery,
Print Print.
So come out to Pat's Pub November 28th for Singles Night to see King Buzzard, Mushy Face, and These Guy.
Okay, welcome back to All Access Pass. Before the break, you were hearing Mystique by Tash Sultana, which has now, I think, become one of my new personal favorite songs. With that, we're going to continue with this movie analysis, looking at the Gold Test to see how disability is represented. Patricio, what film or TV show did you look at?
Well, actually, this is a TV show called Perception, in which the main character is Dr. Daniel Pearce, who is an eccentric neuroscience professor with paranoid schizophrenia, who is recruited by the FBI to solve complex cases and problems. Pearce has an intimate knowledge of human behavior and a masterful understanding of the way the mind works. He also has an uncanny ability to see patterns and look past people's conscious emotions to see what lies beneath. He passes the Gold Test, as the whole series or TV show is based on how he uses his hallucinations, his state, to see details that non-mental disabled people overlook sometimes. And later on the show, this is a spoiler alert, he decides actually to study neurosciences because he wanted to understand his condition. That is how he became a doctor. Also, Pierce's mind, it's brilliant, but he also struggles with, as I said before, hallucinations and paranoid delusions brought on by his schizophrenia. Oddly, Daniel considers some of his hallucinations to be a gift, and they occasionally allow him to make connections that his conscious mind cannot yet process. At other times, the hallucinations become Daniel's greatest curse, leading him to behave in irrational, potentially dangerous ways. His overall mental condition and offbeat manner make it difficult for him to achieve the close friendships and intimate relationships he craves. He is in his element when solving an intricate puzzle or a coded message, but in unfamiliar situations, he can quickly become overwhelmed. And only his favorite music and crossword puzzle have the power to make things right again. Do you have any comments about this TV show? Nope. Okay, then let's talk a little bit more
I'm just taking it all in.
Okay, well, we're going to talk or discuss later on. Let's talk a little bit more about the Canadian actor, Michael J. Fox, the guy from Back to the Future. In the legal drama, or TV show legal drama, The Good Wife, he portrays an antagonist secondary role. The name of this antagonist is Louis Canning. Let's remember that Fox was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease in 1992, a diagnosis to be handed at the age of 30 when he was at the peak of his acting career. Almost a quarter of a century later, he continues to enjoy a successful film and TV career. Now, let's go to his character. Louis Canning is an attorney from New York with his own law firm, Canning & Meyers. And no, I don't believe he passes the Gold Test, as his character is based on his opposition to the main character, Alicia Florrick. However, it is mentioned in the show that he suffered from tardive dyskinesia, a condition which causes involuntary and erratic body movements, similar to Parkinson's disease. He often uses his neurological health problem in favor of his client's advantage in court, attempting to endear himself and win sympathy from the judge and jury. I will personally say that Michael J. Fox's character tackles the dehumanization of people with disabilities. I mean, while these characters are often presented on television and movies as figures who need sympathy from the audience, Canning is the antithesis of this dire stereotype. Just think about it. He's a successful lawyer that just wants to win in a Machiavellian way, only considering the end and no the means. And sometimes, you want to sympathize with a guy, but he's such an unscrupulous, immoral character that makes any grasp of sympathy fade away.
Interesting. I find that really interesting, too, to have Michael J. Fox kind of come back and play a character taking on a disability that's kind of come later in his life, especially because he started out his career kind of without a disability, and then now he's kind of playing on it in The Good Wife. I think that that's really interesting.
He has also appeared in other TV shows. Mm-hmm. He even had his own TV show, which was called The Michael J. Fox Show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that had like more than 20 episodes.
Nice. Nice. And he's still continuing to do his thing, for sure.
That's right.
For sure. So I guess Kaylin and Sarah, you guys both looked at a movie together, kind of a little bit more well-known one here. You guys, what film did you do?
So we watched The Silver Linings Playbook, starring Jennifer Lawrence and Bradley Cooper.
Ooh, okay. And big question, did it pass the gold test?
I don't think either of us thought it passed the gold test at all.
Okay, lay this out for me. Why didn't it pass the gold test?
All right, well, the whole thing is focused... The opening scene is basically him coming out of an institution because of his undiagnosed bipolar, I guess. And the major component of this is that... What do you think, Kaylin?
I just think that they centered the entire film around his disability and whether or not he was in the element of having his mood swings or whatever, and every single thing in his life centered around it.
Right.
It never went, like, until the end where he got better. I'm quoting, like, I don't really know if you can get better from that, but it's what they portrayed it as. And so, I don't know, I just feel like it definitely did not see him as a person other than a person with disability.
So what would you say to people who are like, oh my God, I watched Silver Linings Playbook. I saw a realistic, like, raw representation of mental illness after watching it and doing a little bit of research. What do you guys think?
I think it's kind of difficult to say that because, I mean, like, I've never, like, experienced bipolar disorder firsthand. but I feel like you have to take into consideration that neither of the actors starring in this movie have disability themselves.
Right.
And
right.
So when you take that into consideration, you have to assume that the way that they were acting was just with what they see. So it's a stereotypical portrayal. Anything to add?
Yeah, and... Honestly, in this respect, I can see maybe there are some disabilities where, I don't know, maybe just people can't fit into a role. Maybe that's a bad thing to say. But here, really having someone with bipolar could have made this an incredible movie.
Right, right.
And
for sure.
Because I don't think that any one of us could possibly experience as high highs as these guys experience and as low lows. And that's really too bad. And... The other interesting thing is this, like, idea that, like, I can only fall in love with someone else with a disability now.
Right.
And I can only be loved by someone else with a disability.
That's totally true. I didn't think about that when, like, how the plot kind of, you know, does almost this, like, matchmaker between Jennifer Lawrence's character and Bradley Cooper's character.
Yeah, they match it because it's basically like they get thrown together because of their disability.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is that, like, Jennifer Lawrence's character is never diagnosed as having something. I mean, she mentions depression, and she obviously, like, underwent something traumatic because, you know, her husband died. But the thing is that it doesn't seem like that's the way that it has to be. And, like, Bradley Cooper's character, he the entire film was just trying to get his wife back.
Right.
And his wife left him. Was cheating on him or whatever, and, like, left him. And because of that, you know, that's what made his bipolar disorder come to light and which made him go to an institution for 8 months.
Right.
So, I don't know. I agree. Like, it made it seem like unless you have a disability, you can't be loved by anybody unless they have a disability too.
Right, right. I know I was looking, Sarah, here at your notes that you mentioned also, like, stigmas towards mental illness. Did you, like, there are, you know, that's I kind of think that that's maybe why this film got, you know, a lot of the attention it did because it was confronting the stigmas on mental illness. How do you, like, did you think that they were playing on that? Did you think that they were falling into stereotypes when they were doing this?
So the interesting thing about this movie is that I noticed immediately the family seemed to understand what to do with this character.
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't think always happens. I don't think that the family and friends know how to act when someone has a bipolar or some disability. The stigma part, what do you think, Kaylin?
I think part of the reason that the family understood so well is because I believe that his father had OCD, or was OCD, so I feel like that probably played into the fact that, like a mental illness kind of tied into their family life in every way. As far as, like, stigmas and stuff like that surrounding mental illness, I don't know. There was one scene where Bradley Cooper's character went to a place of work where he used to teach, and, like, immediately the other person that was there, like, tried to run away from him and was, like, afraid of him, mm-hmm. and made it seem like he was going to attack them or something like that. And it was because in one instant he did, in fact, lay a beating on somebody, and so then it just, like, made it appear as if though he was just going to be violent towards everybody.
Right.
And I feel like that's sort of just like another stereotype.
For sure.
I don't know.
For sure.
Just one big stereotype that I saw was focusing around the medication. Because
right.
there was that first instance where he meets, what is the woman's name again? I don't know. He meets his lover. And
this is the main character.
Yeah, I don't know.
Jennifer Lawrence. He meets Jennifer Lawrence.
Yeah.
Yes.
And And he meets Jennifer Lawrence, and they're having this like fast exchange of, oh, have you been on this meds? Yeah, I didn't like that, but I've been on these.
Mm-hmm.
And like this fast-paced exchange, and this like, I'm so comfortable with being over this medication, and like. There's this idea like, yeah, I can get over my illness without medication, which I really don't think that you should be doing.
Yeah, I totally agree. That was totally one of the things I took out of the film as well, because like in the end it almost seems as if the like his bipolar disorder is cured, and then I was looking at it and I was like, it's crazy because he went through the entire film without taking his medication and saying that he didn't need it. And there was times where he blew up and there was times where he was totally fine.
Right.
But like, it was just mind blowing that even like, cause to me, I mean, the point of the medication is obviously not to like I understand that people do struggle with that. Like they don't want to have to take the medication. And that's like also a stigma of having a mental health illness is that you have to be on medication in order to be, you know, good and well, but his character became good and well without any of that,
right.
which seems so hard in an 8-month instant,
right.
like, stance to have gone from, like, blowing up and almost killing somebody to being completely fine.
Right, right. I think we need to really be careful with the fact that these are films and TV shows and there is a heavy aspect of theatrics. So what happens when you have a character who's fine, who doesn't take their medication? Like, what kind of message... You know, what are the takeaways that people get from these?
I think that kind of makes it seem as if, though, the mental illness is not as serious as
right.
it is. And I think it kind of takes away from the fact that, like, people struggle with this daily and it's not something that you can just get over in, like, less than a year. And
right.
it's something that, you know, you face always. And it's, I don't know. And I feel like without taking the medication, like there are people who literally cannot cope without doing so.
Right.
And so to me, it was just really like it was really not great. It was misrepresented, I think.
Right.
In that bipolar disorder is just so maybe he had a mild form of bipolar disorder, but
right.
they never stressed that. So like for
right.
anyone watching it, if you don't know bipolar disorder, if you don't know people, if you've not had a personal experience with it, then you might have a different perception of what it is.
Right.
And I think that that's just something that was kind of lacking in the film.
So I think we're going to head into a song break. But before we do that, any ending remarks from you two on Silver Linings Playbook and your kind of gold test analysis of it?
The last remark I would like to make is that Silver Linings Playbook only covered one half of bipolar and the mania, which, like, sometimes can be an interesting part of people. People can be perceived as interesting when they have a lot of energy and a lot of ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I just wanted to point that out because you're taking the most, maybe the part which is could be so interesting and beautiful and have a lot of aspects that they might be seen as popular,
mm-hmm.
but they've taken away the depression and the hopelessness and all that too. So, but great job, people.
Awesome. So with that, we're going to head into a song break. Stick around. We got a little bit more to go. This is a song by Rye. It's called Taste. Hope you guys enjoy.
I'm not awake. I'm not alone. You're right beside my face. Will you love me this way? 'Cause I'm dancing with my eyes closed. It's okay, it's me, babe. One more time for my taste. One more time for my taste. See me fall from your eyes to your waist. One more time for my taste. Drink this wine from your sweet, from your case. I feel your love, I feel your faithful ways. You're not awake. You're not alone. Dancing with your eyes closed. It's okay, it's me, babe. One more time for my taste.
Mighty Samurai Tyrone here. I want to tell you to listen to my favorite show, Spicy Boys, Wednesday at 12 a.m. Unless you are a normie, then please leave.
Hi, it's Louis Crochu, one of the hosts of the show. I gotta say, this is a good one. Wow, I give it the Louis Crochu seal of approval. Thumbs up, great job. At CITR 101.9 FM.
Can a rigorous examination of current events help us think more clearly about the meaning of such foundations in the light of institutions and emotions, virtues and vices? Come out Wednesday, November 29th, in McLeod, Room 254, to join Professor Thomas Heilig in discussing a close examination of the foundations of democracy, religion, and the current crisis. This event is sponsored by the UBC Graduate and Faculty Christian Forum.
Okay, guys, I think we're all done here on All Access Pass for this week. Great show, guys. We could honestly keep talking about this. If you gave us like another 2 hours, we just keep going and and ranting. And there's so much to say. We definitely hope that this is not the end of this topic. Definitely something to bring up again. Actually, next week, you're going to get to hear some people actually in the field in Hollywood that work to increase disability proper disability representation, accessibility in Hollywood. So stick around next week. You'll get some even more chances to hear about this awesome topic from some insanely informed people. So with that, guys, I think we have to go.
If you're interested in joining our team, I think there's an issue that we should bring up on our show. Send us an email at accessibilitycollective@citr.ca. And thank you to Addison for selecting the music for this week. It was really awesome. Remember to like the All Access Pass page on Facebook. And if you're on Twitter and Instagram, please follow us at @access_CITR.
And as always, if you miss any of our live shows or want to listen again, you can listen to our podcast shows on CITR.ca by going on the search box and searching All Access Pass. Thank you for listening, and tune into our show next week, Wednesday at 4 p.m. Stick around for the Arts Report, which is next. Bye, everyone. Take care.
Bye.
See ya.
Hey there. This ad caught your attention. It also caught the attention of the coolest people from Squamish to Bellingham, music fans, students, and members of various cultural communities. If you want your ad to do the same, advertise with CITR.